Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
In this episode, my husband Tim and I talk about parenting. We look at behavior modification versus faith formation. We ask questions like, what's the best way to discipline? What are our strengths and weaknesses as parents? How do we practice serving and living out our faith with small humans watching? How can we cut through conflict between siblings and get to the heart of the matter? Let's dive in. Okay, so here we are today talking about parenting because we have perfect children.
And yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right is right. I feel like folks with no children or younger children, like littles, might listen to this and be like, I cannot believe that they did that. I would never. And then, like, when we tell stories. And then folks with older kids are probably going to listen and be like, yeah, they know nothing. Just wait.
These guys are noobs.
Total newbies. But
the fact remains that we've kept three children alive for 11 years now.
Yeah.
So we're doing something right.
And that is not our standard. Let's be clear. Like we do.
Some days it is.
Some days it is. And probably, you know, I mean, everyone can probably relate to that. If you're a parent where you feel like that is just a win. You know, I felt like that when we were skiing the first time, like, bah, make sure Opie just doesn't fly off the mountain.
Yeah.
But I think we can't record a parenting podcast without, you know, giving a shout out to our own folks and just acknowledging that we both come from good stock. You know, we've got a legacy of two sets of parents who have raised us well. And so a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today really are from learning from them, both as we were growing up and now as parents.
Yeah. Yeah. We had really good examples on both sides of our families and not everybody has that. So we kind of had some good experiences in our childhoods to draw from that informed some of our parenting early on and still does.
What was that word? Parenting.
That's how they say it in Ireland. Our parenting. Our child rearing. Okay.
You should speak like that the whole time.
No, thanks.
What about our hardest seasons of parenting?
Hardest seasons of parenting were definitely when they were little. I mean, I don't think there are a lot of parents out there that are like baby parents and yeah. They just love mm-hmm. the baby season. And I don't think that either of us are those people.
Yeah.
Like we.
Yeah, you're probably more so than I am, actually.
Yeah.
I really didn't like it.
I enjoyed it a little bit more than you did, but I also didn't have them on my body.
Right.
For
growing
purposes.
Them, nursing them for a long time.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's true. I think that when I think about like the dark ages of my life, I really do think it was like two small children, colicky baby. Brenton was really colicky and we had moved internationally and Charlotte was just a couple years old. She was like three and Brenton was, yeah, just an infant. And I just remember he cried so much and just was really hard to bond with him. And I just remember feeling like, am I cut out for this? Like, am I just, you know, and I must be terrible because I don't even enjoy being around my kids right now, you know? And it wasn't like I didn't enjoy, there weren't moments I didn't enjoy, but on the whole, I felt like the days felt very, and granted at this time I had stopped working and I was mostly working at home. I was doing some part-time art things on the side, but, mostly I was at home during the day. And I think I felt very, just kind of weighed down by the day to day. And then I would also say, you know, when our kids were 4, 1.5 and only 6 weeks old, so we had all three of them at that point, we had lost a job and a home and a community that was all kind of wrapped up into, you know, one. And we lost it all of that, and our world was kind of turned upside down. And I think that that was really more challenging for us personally. But I will say that we saw the importance of it taking a village and having people come around us to stand in the gap for our kids. You know, that it wasn't just that we needed people to bring us meals. It was that we needed people to love on our children and take them when we were like totally, you know, just kind of like zombies and just getting through the motions of what we needed to do and depressed and overwhelmed. And so that was really huge in that season to have people who we trusted, not just as friends, but that could take our children and could, you know, have them for the day, have them for, you know, more than a day and maybe take them overnight or whatever, and be able to really stand in the gap for us. Like when we were not at our parenting best and just couldn't, weren't really present with our kids.
You know? I think back on some of our hardest seasons in parenting and can recognize now in hindsight that a lot of that was actually a reflection of where we were personally as adults, not necessarily where our kids were.
Yeah.
And so some of the tension and the frustrations that we were going to were related to outside, you know, outside situations that had nothing to do with our kids. It just made life with our kids harder. So whether it's job or interpersonal things or, you know, transitions or even our own marriage issues, that stuff is impacted in our parenting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And that one was a little heavier, but I was actually thinking of a funny story about traveling with two kids. And it was just me and it was Charlotte and Brenton. And so they were probably like 3.5 and 9 months. And it's kind of a long story, so, you know, but it's worth it. Okay. So I'm at the very back of the plane, with infant in lap, Brenton, in a like baby Bjorn baby carrier. And then Charlotte is at this time, you know, like old enough to have to be, you know, in a seat and paid for, right? Ticketed passenger, right? So we're the very back corner of the plane. Like there's a reason why they put people like this in this stage of life at the back of the plane, you will see. And so I remember I'm sitting next to this single, very kind young man. And he probably still to this day has never had children because of the events that happened on the flight.
He scarred him.
And so I remember, you know, he was very talkative and just kind of like, you know, one of those chatty people on the plane that is like, so like, you know, I don't have anything to do. Let's just talk, you know? And so he wanted to kind of talk and I'm trying to kind of talk to him and I'm preoccupied with my children. And I remember Charlotte being mom, you know, and kind of interrupting and saying, mom, I really need to go to the bathroom. And so, you know, get up and do this kind of shuffle with a baby on my chest and take Charlotte to the bathroom. Well, I still have like Brenton on my chest in the carrier, 9 month old, and Charlotte, 3 year old, who's recently potty trained. And so she, you know, pees in that tiny little, you know, it's called a bathroom, but I mean, really, it's literally like,
It's a broom closet.
That is a joke. Like trying to pee in that by yourself is a joke, let alone like
with
three people is a joke. Oh, and like, well, anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. But so then I come back and sit down, shuffle past this guy. Cause we're in window seat and middle seat. And this guy is, on the edge. Okay. And so, you know, he keeps talking and I'm still trying to kind of connect with him, whatever, not be rude. And then Charlotte kind of tugs on my shoulder again and she goes, Mom, I need to go poopy. And we're like, oh, okay. You know, so again, newly potty trained. So I'm like, I'm sorry, my daughter needs to go to the bathroom. I need to get out again. So we like shuffle past him and go back, you know? And so, you know, she goes to the bathroom and I try to wipe her as best I can. And we go sit back down, shuffle back in to our seats. Okay. And, then we're sitting there and I remember, I'm talking to him and all of a sudden out of the corner of my eye, I see, Charlotte on the floor and she has like gotten down to like get a marker or something that's fallen on the ground. And she lifts her little arm up and she has this like little looks like a little, you know, just like bundle of like cloth or something. And she's like, "Mom, Mom." And she goes, "Mom, this came out of my bottom." And it is a wad of toilet paper with a little dollop of poop on top of it. I'm not joking. And I'm like, "What in the world do you have, child?" Yeah. And it's basically like in the, you know, inability to like wipe her. She must have gotten like a wad stuck in her little bottom. And so
she had a dingleberry.
Yeah. So, but she's holding it, right? And she's like holding it up. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what do I do?" So I like grab it out of her hands and I'm like, "Excuse me, I am going to have to actually walk by you. My daughter actually..."
She's waving fecal matter all over the plane.
"This is poop." And I was just like, "Oh my gosh, I don't even know what to do here right now." Like there's... So he like gets up and is like out of the seat. Like he's not even like trying to let me walk by.
He's not being polite anymore.
No, he's like... And so I walk to the bathroom and take Charlotte back and I'm like, "Okay, you know what? Like... this is like, obviously, you know, like I need to wipe her again, you know?" And so we sit back down and then all of a sudden I'm like, "Oh my goodness. Like I'm so like warm and like soaking wet. Like what is happening?" And I realized that like sweet Brenton, 9 month old on my chest, like I haven't changed his diaper in hours because of like this whole fiasco. And he has peed and like, it has leaked all through like baby carrier onto my shirt, like everywhere. And so I don't have a change of clothes for him. For me, I have a change of clothes for him. So I get up and again, I try to change his diaper, change his outfit, all that stuff. But I'm like, you know, just wet t-shirt, you know? So then I go...
"You're that mom."
And I ask the guy to watch my child while I go take the other one. Cause I'm like, I'm not going to take three humans in there.
You asked a random stranger to babysit your child.
Yeah. So then I sit back down and this is maybe TMI, but this is not a joke. Like, I am wearing white shorts. I remember the shorts. And you probably, if you're listening, you know where this is going. I am wearing white shorts that are like cute and they have this like little rolled cuff on the edges. I remember them. And all of a sudden I am like, "You have got to be kidding me. I just know what has happened." Sure enough, I had started my period in my white shorts and am completely unprepared. And at this point I have to ask the man.
That man.
To hold Brenton.
"Do you have any tampons?"
Hold Brenton and to watch Charlotte so that I can go change my tampon or put, you know, never mind, too much information. But basically I'm like, this is a fail of a flight. Like I didn't even try to hide it. I was basically like, "When..." his name was Wynn. I remember this. I said, "When..."
Poor Wynn.
I know. "I just started my period and I am so sorry."
You told him.
I think I did, because I was like, this has been a hellacious flight. And I mean, there's no point in trying to hide it. Like I have to rummage through my diaper bag to find a, yeah, female supply. And I'm not going to try to hide it. Like we've been through too much at this point, you know? So anyways.
Where was your deadbeat husband on that trip?
I know, right? Seriously, jeez. My co-parent was not with me. And so I will just say that traveling used to be terrible with children. So
it's
so
much better now.
It is better now. It is different now. But
so parents, if you're listening to this and you got littles, there is hope.
There is hope. If you feel a little bit overwhelmed or are terrified to travel, that probably they're like, "Yeah, I'm never traveling now."
And some moms and dads love that season and are way better at it than we were.
Yeah.
But it wasn't our favorite.
Yeah. They were so cute though.
They were really cute.
They were so cute. Yep. Okay. What are some more things that you have thought about as we've been talking about parenting and, just some reflections on the past 11 and a half years and failures and what we've learned? And
I just think one of the best things we can do is take interest in the things that our kids are interested in, you know, and that changes seasonally with our kids. Every few years they have new interests or different interests, or those change, their friends change, you know, what they want to be involved in changes. And so I think it's an ever moving target of whatever they find exciting and important. And we just, it's kind of our responsibility to take interest in that. So for Opie, I mean, this past weekend is a perfect example. This last Saturday, we didn't have a whole lot going on. We were all kind of bumming around the house and he said, "Hey Dad, you want to go outside?" And so we did. Me and him, went outside and I just like followed him around for about an hour and a half. And we shot the BB gun and we climbed trees and...
You were up in a tree?
Well, I watched him climb the tree and made sure that he didn't fall. But yeah, and we jumped on the trampoline. We cuddled in the hammock. We were swinging on the swing and he just was like in heaven. He just loved spending time with me. And it was just because I said yes to go and spend the afternoon with him. And I didn't have an agenda and I didn't have anything else to do. And so it was just like a really sweet time. But I think we're always presented with opportunities to do that for and with our kids. And sometimes we don't take those opportunities. So I think just showing interest in whatever they're involved in.
Yeah. That's cool. I was thinking back to the very beginning of when we first had Charlotte and how our philosophy of parenting has kind of been from the beginning. Our kids are not the center of our universe. We are bringing them into our family and our life, and we are on an adventure together, but they are not our life. Like, they are right. not the source of our joy. They are not the center of our universe. And like, the world does not revolve around them. And, that might sound kind of harsh. But I think that it actually has been, so much more helpful and like healthy, maybe as they've grown up, to kind of even say that and remind them that, you know, because ultimately we do not want our children to be, entitled, self-centered children. And so I think sometimes as parents, we can have that tendency of like, well, my kid's the best and I love them and I want them to have all these things and this particular life or these experiences or whatever. But in doing that, sometimes we can like almost make them the center of our universe.
And I think on that note too, we communicate and want to communicate to our kids that, our marriage is the relationship for you and I that take priority in our family.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not that it's taking priority over our kids necessarily. It's just, we
this
have
is the
to,
most central relationship,
right? Yeah. We have to ensure on a daily, weekly basis that we are not prioritizing our kids' activities and things like that over the health of our marriage. So we have to always be taking a pulse of how are we doing in our relationship? And then how do we bring these kids into that? So I think that's part of that conversation of not making them the center of our world, but having, because after these kids are gone, you know, when they're 18 and off in college, you and I are still going to be here. And so if we make them the center of our world now and then they leave and that center is gone, then there will be a void. But if we focus on us now and add them into that, then I think that's one of the best places you could be.
Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, something that your dad kind of did. He passed away a couple years ago, but I feel like, you know, so many of the ways that he raised you and your siblings, you know, are echoed in our home and his fingerprints are on your parenting for sure. And I was just thinking about conflict and kind of the phrase that you always say.
Yeah. So anytime the kids are arguing, and it could be about anything. I mean, the boys always argue about toys and Nerf guns and all that kind of stuff. But whatever the disagreement is, I sometimes I'll just wait and kind of hang out and listen and let it play out a little bit and see how they can resolve it. Cause that's one thing we try and do is to let them resolve their own conflict and not always be the middleman. Cause we don't want to be helicopter parents, but, when it's devolving and I can tell that they need intervention, something my dad used to say that really, it kind of cuts through all the tension and gets to the bottom of what's most important. As I always ask them, what's more important, this Nerf gun or your brother, or this Nerf gun or your sister? And it kind of changes the...
We have a lot of Nerf guns, so
that's a ton of Nerf guns. Yeah, that's usually the problem between Brenton and Opie right now. So what's more important, this thing, this toy, or your relationship with your sibling? And they know the only answer to that is mm-hmm. my brother or my sister. Because if they say to me, the Nerf gun is more important, then they know that I'm taking that Nerf gun and it's going straight to the garbage because we can't have anything in this house that's more important than a relationship. And so it just kind of, it boils it down real quickly and allows them to regain perspective on how are they using their words in this moment? How are their actions consistent with their belief that my brother or sister actually is more important than this toy? And it gives them the opportunity to reset. So, that's a great parenting thing that we didn't come up with, but I don't know where my dad got it from. Maybe his dad said it, but
Well, you know, we've observed in other families a lot, just, you know, having the opportunity to be around families of kids who are older and, you know, in further down the road in their parenting journey. And I think we've noticed just that, you know, wow, we've seen this family and their kids are so independent and responsible and enjoyable. And, you know, we've seen this family and their kids are as well. And, you know, and kind of asking them, picking their brain, like, okay, so what are the things we can be doing now? Because this isn't just an age thing, obviously. This isn't just like they got to this age and now they're suddenly responsible. And so some of the wisdom and advice has been, you know, why not train them and equip them for that now? And so I think this year in particular, we've been doing that a lot more with like giving our kids bigger responsibilities and entrust, like kind of training them and then entrusting them with bigger responsibilities, like feeding the chickens, making their lunch,
doing their laundry.
And again, our kids are still really young, but now that has become part of like the family rhythm. And I think that came for a couple of reasons, you know, because we both realized, you know, we have workloads and our weekend should not be like us spending trying to get all of these things done. And then sitting around like, you know, mom and dad aren't, but also like mom and dad aren't even spending time with me. Why not actually as a family say, hey, these are the things as a family that need to get done in order for us to continue to move forward. And also for us to have some time of rest and play together on the weekend. And so
if we all knock them out, then it gives us all more time to spend together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
I think that's part of creating a family culture and deciding what it is that you want to be for as a family, and then building your time and your schedule and your life around that. And so sometimes that means collectively knocking things out so that we can go have fun, you know? But that's part of the culture that we want to kind of form in our kids, is having them be responsible enough to take care of those things on their own.
Well, this year we've definitely had some like humbling, parenting moments of, you know, kids getting, getting into trouble in maybe public places or whatever, you know, at school, or, you know, we live in a small community. I remember my dad saying, that he would pray for us when we were kids, that, like our sin would come to the surface, that our sin would be found out, that we wouldn't, like if there were unhealthy habits in our lives, that they wouldn't go undetected and kind of just like thrive in isolation. And I remember being so mad, you know, my dad even saying he was praying that, like, I was like, that sounds so like mean and just kind of like, I don't know, manipulative or something. And, but now as a parent, I get it. And I, you know, want similar things for my children in terms of, you know, wanting the things that they might do now that are unwise, unhealthy, poor choices, that as they grow older, that those things would come to the surface and we would help coach them through those, as opposed to them kind of be able to coddle that behavior, whatever it is, throughout their life. And so, you know, I remember a couple years ago just like picking the brains of some people who had just like read a ton on parenting, were just like had all these great thoughts. And, you know, and I was like, man, I feel totally in over my head, because I feel like, you know, parenting really is something that's like, you know, every kid's different. There's not really a handbook. There's so many things that, you know, you're bringing in what your parents and, you know, you've seen a modeled to you. But the advice was really that, as you discipline your children, to intentionally kind of cause the consequence to meet the choice that they made, you know? We've heard like the punishment fits the crime or whatever. But really, like, in terms of, for example, like if our kid is choosing to say ugly words to their sibling, right? That we've started choosing to give them something that doesn't taste good. Like this year we started doing a little bit of apple cider vinegar, which is disgusting. Some of you health people might be like, oh, I love drinking apple cider vinegar. No, you're lying. It's disgusting. And so we literally give our kids like a little shot glass of apple cider vinegar.
And they hate it.
And it's terrible. I mean, like, they're like, oh, no,
they're screaming and gnashing their teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, the idea is that, like, hey, this is the consequence is supposed to intentionally remind you that mean, ugly, cutting words have a yucky taste. They leave a yucky flavor. And this isn't just about what you're doing when you're a kid. This is about for the rest of your life. Words have a negative consequence if you use them in a negative way. Words can also give life and have a beautiful effect. But if you choose to use your words for ugly things, we want you to remember that there's a yucky aftertaste, you know? And so that was an example. Or I was thinking of even like another situation with our son pushing his brother, that just happened really recently. And again, this was a very public situation, like families galore and, in the center of town, and, him pushing his brother resulted in stitches. And, little trip to the urgent care and all of that. And, so
you have to get that was a situation where we had to get really creative in our consequence, because, not only did he hurt his brother physically, in which resulted in lots of blood and pain and stitches, but there was also financial implications for you and I. I mean, we had to pay for the urgent care bill and the stitches, and it wasn't cheap. But so as we were as Whitney and I were processing it afterwards, we decided that there needed to not only be like a financial consequence for our son, but also for a service consequence. Like he needed to earn back trust from his sibling. But he also needed to understand that this decision he made of hurting his sibling had financial implications, which he needed to help out with. Not that he was, you know, completely strapped for the whole thing, but that he needed to contribute to that in a meaningful and somewhat painful way for him financially, mm-hmm. so that he saw the extent of the decision that he had made. And so, and what we communicate to the kids is all of your choices, all of your actions and your words have consequences. Good actions and good words have often good consequences, mm-hmm. and negative or poor actions and words have negative consequences. And so, what we decided to do was have him pay a portion of the ER bill, the urgent care bill, and and then also serve his sibling by doing his laundry for a number of weeks just to earn back that trust. And yeah. I think it was actually really effective, and, you know, it really helped him see how important that single split second decision that he made, how much of a consequence it really did have.
Yeah. And I think we tried to, you know, and again, maybe we'll look back on this and be like, okay, we totally failed in this way, you know? But the thing we said several times to him was, hey, you know what? There is grace and there is forgiveness, and your brother has forgiven you, mm-hmm. and you have asked for forgiveness, and we have forgiven you. Like, you don't need to beat yourself up about this. You do not need to, continue asking him for forgiveness. But there are consequences, you know, and, it's like a, you know, it almost felt kind of cruel because he felt really bad about it. Yeah. And so it felt kind of cruel, like
we were laying it on.
Yeah. These consequences. But then we were like, you know what? No. And we just kind of walked through, like, buddy, if you go, let's say you go on to college or trade school or something past, you know, high school, and you, you get in a fight with somebody, you know, like you, or in high school, this could happen in high school, you get in a fight with somebody and you, they do something that legitimately frustrates you, but you respond in anger, you can be kicked out. You can lose your, you know, your spot. If you're on a team, you can lose your, you know, your opportunity to play. And then let's fast forward to when you get even older, you know, and, you're in a marriage or you're in a, you know, a working relationship and you get frustrated and you physically push somebody, then, the stakes keep getting higher. You know, this isn't something where it's like, you know, we just really, are so embarrassed of you. And, you know, this is like, hey, we want to give you the tools and remember, like, we would rather you learn this lesson right now while you're less than 10 years old, than when you are 27 and out of our home and having to learn it with like fines and jail. And, you know, and again, like, we're not like, I don't know, it's not like we're trying to extrapolate that, oh, this means our son's going to go beat up somebody. But just like this consequence has, or just like this choice has consequences now, this choice later on in life will actually have bigger consequences. It's not like you grow out of these things when you're an adult, you know?
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor. Woven is committed to encouraging women to get involved with a local church. One congregation that has been instrumental in Woven's growth is Crosspoint Community Church. Not only has Crosspoint provided a greenhouse for Woven in the beginning stages, but they have also acted as a ministry advocate, partnering financially with Woven while also opening their doors to provide Woven a place to gather for weekly Bible studies. One of their mantras is "No perfect people allowed," which serves as yet another reminder of our need for Christ. Crosspoint meets each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and 11 a.m. in LaGrange, Texas. Check out their website at crosspointchurchtx.org. And now back to the show.
So let's talk about service. We often think of service related to our kids as serving our kids, whether it's helping them get ready for school or making their lunch or, you know, taking them from place to place. But what does service look like when you're serving with your kids? What does that look like in our family?
Well, we had the opportunity just about a year and a half ago to take our kids back to the Dominican Republic and serve at the school that we used to work at, when we lived there for 5 years. And that's kind of like a big, you know, example that took a lot of planning, a lot of, you know, funds and, efforts and schedules aligning and all those kinds of things. And that was huge for our family for sure. And I would encourage people to do that. But I think that what I've seen is that, the little steps, of inviting our kids to serve alongside of us, getting sweaty, you know, putting ourselves last, engaging with people different than us, letting our kids see us do hard things, and inviting them in to do that has been really good and also humbling for me, because I think I've seen, just the unique God fingerprint of our kids and how they enjoy doing that, you know? And I think about, there's a local food ministry in our town, called Feed the Need. And there's several families that I've just observed and watched and learned from that do this really beautifully, where they are not just saying, hey, this is what mom and I are going to do, or what, you know, I'm going to do as a parent, but this is, something that our whole family is going to do. And, we want you to be a part of it, and we want you to know the people, and we want you to pray and, help serve the burgers. And, you have just as much, you know, value and stake in this as I do as an adult. And so, it's been kind of cool to see our kids step up in that way, like in little ways that we've chosen to like serve with them and not make it something separate, that we do, or that it's always about, like, again, us putting them at the center. you know, but like, I mean, it could be as simple as like, you know, Charlotte recently was like, I'd like to go volunteer in the nursery. And so we went and volunteered at church, you know, and it wasn't even my idea. You know, it's like, she's like, you know, there are these ways that our kids might want to serve and use their gifts in unique ways. Or even like Opie loves to cook. So it's like, hey, bud, how can we be cooking for somebody else? And so it's just been kind of cool. And I think, again, humbling, because I've seen like, oh, I didn't even think about, like, it almost feels sometimes more inconvenient, right, to bring your kids into those things. Because it's like, I would almost rather just do this by myself. It's easier. And there's a little more of a liability if I bring a kid along, you know, and you make it a little more, probably going to take a little bit longer initially. And, you know, maybe it's a little harder for different reasons. But they've really taught me a lot. It's been really cool to see that happen, you know?
Yeah. I love those opportunities when we get to serve with our kids, because it's tempting to just bring the kids along and then let them play off by themselves while we're serving, because then you don't have to coach or you don't have to teach them anything. Yeah. You don't have to supervise them. They can just be over there doing their own thing. But I think there's actually more value in having them by your side, watching you serve, watching you engage with people. And I think they're picking up things and catching things that maybe are even unintended on our behalf of just some of our values as a family and some of our priorities. And yeah, they're picking up character traits that I think is really beneficial for them to see. So, yeah, I love any opportunity that we can to go and serve as a family is really, really good memories.
Yeah. What about bringing our kids into our faith and the working out of our faith and our relationship with God?
Well, to go back to the beginning of our conversation, where we were talking about consequences, I think that spiritual formation will trump behavior modification.
That's good.
Every time. And so we have to be pouring more into spiritual formation than we are into behavior modification, because I don't think behavior modification in the end is going to get you the character traits that you want to see in your kids, you know? So I think some of the things that we do as a family is, Brenton has this action Bible. What's it called?
Yeah, it is. It's like kind of like a comic Bible, but it's like right at
Bible.
Kind of like their reading level right now and like what they really enjoy.
Yeah. And we've been reading that just once or twice a week. We'll go through another story in the action Bible and they just love it. I mean, they'll all sit on your lap and as you read and they really enjoy that time. I'll also take, I started this last year, I guess, or maybe 2 years ago, but, I started taking each kid every Friday to just out to breakfast with me. And we'll just go through a different passage of the Bible together. And it's, you know, we were having a conversation actually. I mean, I think you actually mentioned it to me a number of years ago, was how are you modeling your relationship with the Lord to our kids? And this was kind of one of my solutions or tie-ins of like, this is how I want to see my kids know that I value the Lord, but I also want it for them as well. And so, we'll just go and have breakfast at a local place each Friday. I'll take a different kid and just spend 30, 45 minutes just hanging out with them one-on-one. And they see me opening the Bible and sharing it with them and kind of talking about what it means and the significance of it. And sometimes it's really like bland and there's no takeaway and there's no, you know, there's not a notable, powerful conversation that we have at each one of these Friday morning breakfasts. But, I think they'll look back on this 20 years from now and say, my dad took the time to take me to breakfast. They won't remember what I said. They probably won't remember even the Bible verses, but they'll remember that I did it and that it was focused on Scripture. And so I think that's the takeaway that I want them to have from you know, looking back at me as a father, mm-hmm. is that was a priority for me.
Yeah. I really think about just me growing up and seeing the ways that my parents had a relationship with the Lord and how, you know, it was something, and it has always been something throughout their lives that they had independent of each other, and that it was independent of us, that they, you know, would journal, or were, I would see my dad early on the sofa in the morning, you know, reading his Bible, and know that my mom was, you know, studying through something. And so in those ways, like, I saw their faith, be something like worth pursuing, you know? And so I am really not a morning person. Like, I actually absolutely hate the mornings, but, I try to get up in the mornings and spend some time, just even if it's a little bit of time in prayer and, studying my Bible in the mornings. And, Brenton this year has just really started to want to sit with me, and he doesn't even really want to read or do anything. He just wants to sit and kind of like, he's still in his pajamas. And so he sets his alarm. He'll ask me, "What time are you getting up, Mom?" And some, you know, at first I was almost a little bit like, "Ugh, I just kind of wanted that time by myself, you know?" But then I was like, you know what? I know that, you know, this window is short, you know? And so he will just sit with me, lay on the couch and under a blanket usually, and just have his feet in my lap while I'm reading my Bible. And, usually I don't even read. Like, he's like, "Mom, I just want to sit here." You know, I asked him the other day, like, "Do you want to know what I'm reading?" He said, "No, I just really want to sit with you." And, so I guess this year I've just been seeing the ways that, we can bring our children into our own journey of faith and share the things that we're learning, share vulnerably with our kids, even like, you know what, this is really something that's hard for Mom. This is really something that's hard for Dad. And, this is what I'm learning, like what the scripture has to say to me in this and how it's convicting me, you know? Those things are so good for us to tell our kids. And I think that our kids are capable of understanding a lot more than we give them credit for.
For sure.
You know, like this year, it's like, we've been studying through really the whole year, the Old Testament. And again, it's this Action Bible. And so it's a little bit more like geared for kids, but there's some really hard stuff in there. And there's some, you know, really like detailed stories and accounts that most people I feel like would be like, "Yeah, this is like over the heads of kids." And I've thought that this year, like, are they even hearing any of this? And then they'll refer back to something that I'm like, "Oh, you were really listening and you really remember this." And so, you've said before that, you know, you have a, like in high school, there was a youth pastor.
My youth pastor.
Yeah.
Matt Cassidy. He would always say, whenever he was my youth pastor, he was doing a master's or doctorate program at UT. And so he was taking, and I think part of that, he was even teaching some upper level classes at the university as well. And so as part of his, you know, what he was learning, he would deliver, you know, to middle school and high school kids in Austin, where I grew up. He was delivering these like thesis level, dissertation level sermons on Sunday morning at youth group. And he would always say, you know, because he was talking about this really like high level stuff, and he would always say, "If it's good enough for college, it's good enough for middle school." And so he was talking about stuff that like these college students, he was teaching college students, and but then also delivering it to a middle school audience, you know, the next week. And his thought in that was, we don't need to, I think we do ourselves a disservice. We do our kids a disservice if we dumb things down to their level. I think they're actually ready for a meatier substance. And we can give it to them and then kind of let them rise to the occasion, I think.
Yeah. I think the last thing I would say on just the faith piece, that I would say are, you know, I've definitely seen my parents model, and I've read about, even I remember reading about and actually refer to it in another podcast in this season. But just the importance of admitting our faults and asking for forgiveness with our children, super hard and really humbling, but I feel like, you know, it's really cool to see them respond graciously when we ask for forgiveness. I mean, I have to do it all the time, buddy. I'm really sorry. I screwed up and I, really was not very kind to you and I need to ask for forgiveness. You know, I'm really sorry. And, to give them the opportunity to extend us grace and then also like admit, like we are learning some of the same stuff that we're teaching you right now. This stuff isn't, easy now that we're adults, or it's not irrelevant now that we're adults. It's just as important for us, you know?
Well, if they don't see us fail and recover from it, then they'll think that the goal is perfection.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, 'cause we can't get there. And there's a lot of like strict Orthodox Christian families that grow up thinking that the goal is perfection and they're striving for something that they'll never achieve. And I think that's just an outdated viewpoint, you know, like we want to model to our kids that we're human and we sin and mess up just like mm-hmm. you do. And it's not going to necessarily go away when you're an adult, but you can choose how you respond differently to it. And so, yeah, just failing forward, I guess, in front of our kids is letting them see that and then see yeah. how we resolve it too.
Yeah. It's really hard.
It is hard. And you don't,
yeah.
you don't always want your kids to see you fail, but I think it's important for them to see it and then see you get to the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, probably this is, you know, again, I'm really, it's really funny to say all these things. And then, you know, it, again, it's like, we don't think this isn't a formula or like, our kids are going to turn out a certain way or they're going to choose this path or whatever. I guess this is more of just like the things that we've been learning
yeah.
in our process of parenting. And,
this isn't necessarily the right way to do it. It's just
yeah.
the route that we've chosen.
Being honest about our
season.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What do you think are your strengths and weaknesses as a parent?
Strengths, I would say, I'm the best dad in the world. I'm basically a superhero.
There you have it. Hard to beat. I'm basically a superhero. The kids do think you're they do think that you are a superhero.
Yeah, that'll go away someday. But
for sure.
I'm relishing it now while they still think that about me.
Yeah, we should probably back up a little bit. Our kids, as we're recording this, our kids are the age between the ages of 7 and 11. So Charlotte is 11 and a half. Soon to be 12. She'll be going to sixth grade next year. So again, parents of older children are like rolling their eyes like, oh,
they haven't gotten the worst of
yeah.
it.
And then we have our middle son, Brenton, is 8 and a half and he'll be in fourth grade next year. And then our youngest, Opie, who's about as mischievous as that name sounds and so delightful. He is 7. He just turned 7 and he is finishing first grade, second grade is coming next year. So that's a little overview of kind of where we are as parents. So really we've only been parents for 11 and a half years. So again, we're very new.
We've said it for probably the past 3 or 4 years that we are like right in the middle of the golden years in terms of parenting. Like our kids are old enough that they can wipe their own butts and shower themselves and
swim.
They don't mm-hmm. without floaties and mm-hmm. they can even make themselves a meal.
We don't have
like
to
that.
Take pack and plays when yeah. we're in just booster seats.
Yeah. And one of ours is our youngest is almost out of a booster seat. So soon within the next yeah. year, we won't even have uh-huh. any sort of booster seats.
Game changer.
But then also they're not old enough to where we're not cool anymore.
Right. They still kind of, they are asking us like, when are we going to go to Walt Disney World together? You know, it's like
they still want to spend time with
us. They want to. Yeah. They want to go on a vacation together with us. Like that sounds like the height of like their current social life.
They still want to cuddle with us.
Not all of them.
Some of them.
Yeah.
But so these are, I think we like 20 years from now, we will look back on this 5-year season of this middle age
yeah.
of our kids and look back on these memories as like some of the best years. Now, that's not to say that the older years won't have their yeah. own awesomeness, but I think in terms of like their need of us and us fulfilling things that they need right now, mm-hmm. it's really satisfying. So yeah. I love this season that we're in. Okay. So back to your original question of
yep. you're evading
strengths and weaknesses. I think I am a really fun parent. I think that, I make my kids laugh a lot and I laugh at their cheesy jokes too. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they like, we just have a really good time together, whatever it is that yeah. we're doing. Like they think I'm funny and they think I'm a fun dad.
Yeah.
So.
Which you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You try.
Yeah. Sometimes we got to reel it in. Hey, we need a parent here, not another kid. Okay. Well, what about weaknesses?
Weaknesses.
Wow. You really no. have to, you really do think you're a superhero parent.
I don't know. Maybe I would kick that one back to you. What are my weaknesses in parenting?
That is not fair. I'm not going to do that. I'll talk for myself and okay. then you can talk about yourself.
Circle back to me on that one.
Pride, maybe? I think that similar, I think I can be fun. I think I can be spontaneous. But I would say like, my strength is to encourage them and kind of always like seeing the things that they're into and the ways that they're growing and just the kind things that they're doing or, you know, the ways that, they're just finding things that they enjoy or whatever and kind of drawing those things out, encouraging and cheering them in that. But I would say weaknesses, multitasking is for sure my undoing. I think that as a parent, I often feel like, and as a working parent and in grad school, there's all these different layers of often feeling like I'm doing too many things while I'm also trying to parent. And so then my kids are getting in the way and I'm treating them like the problem. And so, I do feel like my impatience can be a weakness, especially when I am doing and juggling too many things. I think sometimes I can be too emotionally charged as a parent. And so I've had to really work on like parenting and disciplining kind of like more, removed from like my own emotion and more about like, hey, this is the choice you made. This is the consequence that you have. As opposed to like, I'm so frustrated with you. Like you're so difficult, you know? So yeah, I would say those are some of the things. So have you come up with any weaknesses for yourself?
I thought about some more strengths.
Oh my gosh.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I was just thinking probably the area I would say is a weakness would be me projecting my desires onto them in terms of what their current or future choices will look like. So that could look like something as simple as like the sport that they're choosing to play this season or the shirt that they're choosing to wear to school, to church. Like I see that as a reflection of me instead of it being their fashion choice, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I will discourage them from wearing this shirt to school or whatever, instead of this other shirt that I think looks better when in reality, like it doesn't really matter. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Or maybe people do care, but it's not important.
Right.
So I think that I project those micro decisions on them in a way that isn't necessary.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, any other thoughts of wisdom on parenting?
I think the other thing I would just say is praying for, but also like, again, inviting our kids to pray. Every morning on the way to school, we take turns praying and, you know, nobody ever has to pray, but I'll say like, does anybody want to pray for the day today? And one of them usually volunteers and, you know, and it's been honestly so sweet and just, again, really challenging and encouraging for me to hear the things that they pray and just to help them understand that, you know, if they believe in Jesus then the Holy Spirit is a gift to them, is his presence is within them, and that the Holy Spirit is intended to, like, help us obey God, you know, help us know God, help us experience God, help us know his truth, and to walk like he's intended for us to walk. And so I think that it goes back to the faith formation versus the behavior modification thing you said. Like, I think a lot of the behavior modification for myself has come as a result of, like, oh my gosh, I'm mortified that my kid did this today at school and they had to go to the principal's office. You know, I'm mortified that my kid did this and that parents saw it and probably, what do they think of me? I'm mortified that my kid responded like that, you know? And it comes back to me, you know? But the faith formation is more about, you know, saying, like, I don't own this child, but God has entrusted this child to me to guide, encourage, coach, love on. And I pour into them, but their choices are not directly connected to my identity or my worth or my value as a parent, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I think the other crazy thing is that whenever you marry somebody, you never really know what kind of parent they're going to be. I mean,
unless maybe it's a second marriage or they've had children before, or.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about us specifically. Like, you had no idea what kind of parent I was going to be, and I didn't know about you either. I mean, we had indicators because of the type of families that we were raised in.
Yeah.
But you never know for sure. And, so I'm glad to be doing this with you.
Aw. Aw. That's sweet. We better go before we get too cheesy. And that's a wrap.
Love you.
Love you.
If you'd like to know more about this ministry, check out our website at wovenministry.com or download the Woven app to engage on a deeper level. Please take the time to rate and review this podcast. It helps listeners find this feed. But better yet, share Wits End with a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, and production is by Tim Scarborough. We are so thrilled you tuned in today.